So, as I said, we are on chapter 15, part two, the cosmic consciousness, page 409. The order that I see is John Robert first, then me, and then Andrea. Okay, should we make 2 minutes of meditation?
I think my chime is downstairs. I have a small one here that we can use. It's not as nice as the other one, but Chapter 15, The Cosmic Consciousness. To realize and unite oneself with the active Brahman is to exchange, perfectly or imperfectly, according as the union is partial or complete, the individual for the cosmic consciousness. The ordinary existence of man is not only an individual, but an egoistic consciousness. It is, that is to say, the individual soul or Jivatman identifying himself with the notice of his mental, vital, physical experiences in the movement of universal nature. That is to say, with his mind-created ego, and less intimately with the mind, life, body, which receive the experiences. Less intimately, because of these he can say, my mind, life, body. He can regard them as himself, yet partly as not himself, and something rather which he possesses and uses. But of the ego, he says, it is I. By detaching himself from all identification with mind, life, and body, he can get back from his ego to the consciousness of the true individual, the Jivatman, who is the real possessor of mind, life, and body. Looking back from this individual to that of which it is the representative and conscious figure, he can get back to the transcendent consciousness of pure self, absolute existence, or absolute non-being, three poises of the same eternal reality. But between the movement of universal nature and this transcendent existence, possessor of the one and cosmic self of the other, is the cosmic consciousness, the universal Purusha, of whom all nature is the Prakriti, or active conscious force. We can arrive at that, become that, whether by breaking the walls of the ego laterally, as it were, and identifying oneself with all existences in the one, or else from above, by realizing the pure or absolute existence in its outgoing, immanent, all-embracing, all-constituting self-knowledge and self-creating power.
The immanent, silent self in all is the foundation of this cosmic consciousness for the experience of the mental being. It is a witness, pure and omnipresent, who, as the silent conscious soul of the cosmos, regards all the activity of the universe. It is Satchitananda, for whose delight universal nature displays the eternal procession of her works. We are aware of an unwounded delight, a pure and perfect presence, an infinite and self-contained power, present in ourselves and all things, not divided by their divisions, not affected by the stress and struggle of the cosmic manifestation. It is within it all, but it is superior to it all. Because of that, all this exists, but that does not exist because of all this. It is too great to be limited by the movement in time and space, which it inhabits and supports. This foundation enables us to possess, in the security of the divine existence, the whole universe within our own being. We are no longer limited and shut in by what we inhabit, but like the divine contain in ours, by like the divine contain in ourselves, all that for the purpose of the movement of nature we consent to inhabit. I read this sentence. We are no longer limited and shut in by what we inhabit, but like the divine contain in ourselves, all that for the purpose of the movement of nature we consent to inhabit. We are not mind or life or body, but the informing and sustaining soul, silent, peaceful, eternal, which possesses them. And since we find this soul everywhere, sustaining and informing and possessing all lives and minds and bodies, we cease to regard it as a separate individual being in our own. In it, all this moves and acts. Within all this, it is stable and immutable. Having this, we possess our eternal self-existence, at rest in its eternal consciousness and bliss.
I just want to mention that there was a lot in this paragraph. I have an older edition that was all rearranged. So we'll see what happens when I read the next paragraph, if you have the same.
Would you like to reread it again eventually?
No, it's not. It didn't change the meaning.
Okay.
Yeah, unless you want to hear it.
No.
Okay. Next, we have to realize this silent self as the Lord of all the action of universal nature, the same self-existent displayed in the creative force of its eternal consciousness. All this action is only his power and knowledge and self-delight, going abroad in his infinite being to do the works of his eternal wisdom and will. We realize the divine, the eternal self of all, first, as the source of all action and inaction, of all knowledge and ignorance, of all delight and suffering, of all good and evil, perfection and imperfection, of all force and form, of all the outgoing of nature from the eternal divine principle, and of all the return of nature towards the divine. We realize it next as itself going abroad in its power and knowledge, for the power and knowledge are itself, not only the source of their works, but the creator and doer of their works, one in all existences. For the many souls of the universal manifestation are only faces of the one divine. The many minds, lives, bodies are only his masks and disguises. We perceive each being to be the universal Narayana, presenting to us many faces. We lose ourselves in that and perceive our own mind, life, and body as only one presentation of the self, and all whom we formerly conceived of as others are now to our consciousness, ourself in other minds, lives, and bodies. All force and idea and event and figure of things in the universe are only manifest degrees of this self, values of the divine in his eternal self-figuration. Thus viewing things and beings, we may see them first as if they were parts and parcels of his divided being. But the realization and the knowledge are not complete unless we go beyond this idea of quality and space and division and see the infinite everywhere, the universe and each thing in the universe as in its existence and secret consciousness and power and delight, the indivisible divine in its entirety. However much the figure it makes to our minds may appear only as a partial manifestation. When we possess thus the divine as a silent and surpassing witness and the active Lord and all constituting being, without making any division between these aspects, we possess the whole cosmic divine, embrace all of the universal self and reality, are awake to the cosmic consciousness.
What will be the relation of our individual existence to this cosmic consciousness to which we have attained? For since we have still a mind and body and human life, our individual existence persists even though our separate individual consciousness has been transcended. It is quite possible to realize the cosmic consciousness without becoming that. We can see it, that is to say, with the soul, feel it and dwell in it. We can even be united with it without becoming wholly one with it. In a word, we may preserve the individual consciousness of the Jivatman within the cosmic consciousness of the universal self. We may preserve a yet greater distinctness between the two and enjoy the relations between them. We may remain in a way entirely the individual self while participating in the bliss and infinity of the universal self. Or we may possess them both as a greater and lesser self, one we feel pouring itself out in the universal play of the divine consciousness and force, the other in the action of the same universal being through our individual soul center or soul form, for the purposes of an individual play of mind, life, and body. But the summit of this cosmic realization by knowledge is always the power to dissolve the personality in universal being. to merge the individual in the cosmic consciousness, to liberate even the soul form into the unity and universality of the spirit. This is the laya, dissolution or moksha, liberation, at which the yoga of knowledge aims. This may extend itself, as in the traditional yoga, to the dissolution of mind, life, and body itself into the silent self or absolute existence. But the essence of the liberation is the merging of the individual in the infinite. When the yogin no longer feels himself to be a consciousness situated in the body or limited by the mind, but has lost the sense of division in the boundlessness of an infinite consciousness, that which he set out to do is accomplished. Afterwards, the retaining or non-retaining of the human life is a circumstance of no essential importance, for it is always the formless one who acts through its many forms of the mind and life and body. And each soul is only one of the stations from which it chooses to watch and receive and actuate its own play.
That into which we merge ourselves in the cosmic consciousness is Satchitananda. It is one eternal existence that we then are, one eternal consciousness which sees its own works in us and others, one eternal will or force of that consciousness which displays itself in infinite workings, one eternal delight which has the joy of itself in all its workings. It is itself stable, immutable, timeless, spaceless, supreme, and it is still itself in the infinity of its workings, not changed by their variations, not broken up by their multiplicity, not increased or diminished by their ebbing and flowings in the seas of time and space, not confused by their apparent contraries or limited by their widely willed limitations. Satchitananda is the unity of the many-sidedness of manifested things. Satchitananda is the eternal harmony of all their variations and oppositions. Satchitananda is the infinite perfection which justifies their limitations and is the goal of their imperfections. Wonderful paragraph.
That is interesting. It's the goal of their imperfections.
Yeah.
It is evident that by dwelling in this cosmic consciousness, our whole experience and valuation of everything in the universe will be radically changed. As individual egos, we dwell in the ignorance and judge everything by a broken, partial, and personal standard of knowledge. We experience everything according to the capacity of a limited consciousness and force, and are therefore unable to give a divine response or set the true value upon any part of cosmic experience. We experience limitation, weakness, incapacity, grief, pain, struggle, and its contradictory emotions, or the opposite of these things, as opposites in an eternal duality, and not in the eternity of an absolute good and happiness. We live by fragments of experience and judge by our fragmentary values each thing and the whole. When we try to arrive at absolute values, we only promote some partial view of things to do duty for a totality in the divine workings. We make believe that our fractions are integers and thrust our one-sided viewpoints into the Catholicity of the all vision of the divine.
But by entering into the cosmic consciousness, we begin to participate in that all vision and see everything in the values of the infinite and the one. Limitation itself, ignorance itself, change their meaning for us. Ignorance changes into a particularizing action of divine knowledge. Strength and weakness and incapacity change into a free putting forth and holding back various measures of divine force. Joy and grief, pleasure and pain change into a mastering and a suffering of divine delight. Struggle, losing its discords, becomes a balancing of forces and values in the divine harmony. We do not then suffer by the limitations of our mind, life, and body, for we no longer live in these, even when we record and accept them, but in the infinity of the spirit. And these we view in their right value and place and purpose in the manifestation as degrees of the Supreme Being, conscious force and delight of Satchidananda, veiling and manifesting himself in the cosmos. We cease also to judge other men and things by their outward appearances and are delivered from hostile and contradictory ideas and emotions. For it is the soul that we see, the divine that we seek and find in everything and creature. And the rest has only a secondary value to us in a scheme of relations which exists now for us only as self-expressions of the divine and not as having any absolute value in themselves. So too, no event can disturb us, since the distinction of happy and unhappy, beneficent and maleficent happenings loses its force, and all is seen in its divine value and its divine purpose. Thus we arrive at a perfect liberation and an infinite equality. It is this consummation of which the Upanishad speaks when it says, "He in whom the self has become all existences, how shall he have delusion? Whence shall he have grief, who knows entirely and sees in all things oneness?" There's a footnote there. Vijnana is the knowledge of the one and the many, by which the many are seen in the terms of the one, in the infinite unifying truth, right, vast, of the divine existence.
But this can be only when there is perfection in the cosmic consciousness, and that is difficult for the mental being. The mentality, when it arrives at the idea of the realization of the spirit, the divine, tends to break existence into two opposite halves, the lower and the higher existence. It sees on one side the infinite, the formless, the one, the peace and bliss, the calm and silence, the absolute, the vast and pure. On the other, it sees the finite. On the other, it sees the finite, the worlds of form, the jarring multiplicity, the strife and suffering and imperfect, unreal good, the tormented activity and futile success, the relative, the limited, and vain and vile. To those who make this division and this opposition, complete liberation is only attainable in the peace of the one, in the featureless of the infinite, in the non-becoming of the absolute, which is to them the only real being. To be free, all values must be destroyed. All limitations, not only transcended, but abolished. They have the liberation of the divine rest, but not the liberty of the divine action. They enjoy the peace of the transcendent, but not the cosmic bliss of the transcendent. their liberty depends upon abstention from the cosmic movement. It cannot dominate and possess cosmic existence itself. But it is also possible for them to realize and participate in the immanent and as well as the transcendent peace. Still, the division is not cured. The liberty they enjoy is that of the silent, unacting witness, not the liberty of the divine master consciousness, which possesses all things, delights in all, casts itself into all forms of existence without fear of fall or loss or bondage or stain. All the rights of the spirits are not yet possessed. There is still a denial, a limitation, a holding back from the entire oneness of all existence. The working of mind, life, body are viewed from the calm and peace of the spiritual planes of the mental being and are filled with that calm and peace. They are not possessed by and subjected to the law of the all-manifesting spirit.
This is when the mental being takes its station in its own spiritual planes, in the mental planes of Sat, Chit, Ananda, and casts down their light and delight upon the lower existence. But it is possible to attempt to arrive at a kind of cosmic consciousness by dwelling on the lower planes themselves, breaking their limitation laterally, as we have said, and calling down into them the light and largeness of the higher existence. Not only spirit is one, but mind, life, and matter are one. There's one cosmic mind, one cosmic life, one cosmic body. All the attempt of man to arrive at universal sympathy, universal love, and the understanding and knowledge of the inner soul of other existences is an attempt to beat, thin, breach, and eventually break down by the power of the enlarging mind and heart, the walls of the ego, and arrive nearer to a cosmic oneness. And if we can, by the mind and heart, get at the touch of the spirit, receive the powerful inrush of the divine into this lower humanity, and change our nature into a reflection of the divine nature by love, by universal joy, by oneness of mind with all nature and all beings, we can break down the walls. It is a tall order. Even our bodies are not really separate entities, and therefore our very physical consciousness is capable of oneness with the physical consciousness of others and of the cosmos. The yogin is able to feel his body one with all bodies, to be aware of and even to participate in their affections. He can feel constantly the unity of all matter and be aware of his physical being as only a movement in its movement. Jagatyam Jagat from the Isha Upanishads. Still more is it possible for him to feel constantly and normally the whole sea of the infinite life as his true vital existence, and his own life as only a wave of that boundless surge. And more easily yet is it possible for him to unite himself in mind and heart with all existences, be aware of their desires, struggles, joys, sorrows, thoughts, impulses, in a sense as if they were his own, at least as occurring in his larger self, hardly less intimately or quite as intimately as the movements of his own heart and mind. This too is a realization of cosmic consciousness.
I have a text here from Karen that I need to respond to. So if you all want to go ahead and read, or if you want to wait a few minutes, I'll rejoin.
Let's wait.
Yeah. So, how is it going there?
Well, this is a really challenging text. I like it. I'm happy with it. I like it much better than the last two chapters. But boy, it's a huge shift that we need to make, right? I keep thinking
about us. Yeah.
Well, it's just this is a suggestion that we try, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, he wouldn't have written it.
Yeah, but at the end of the story, it's all about surrender, no? It's not us who get there. It's right. The divine that works in us and leads us there, no? Yeah.
I keep forgetting that it's not my doing, you know? It's so difficult to...
At the beginning, he says that at the beginning there is necessary the personal effort.
Yeah.
Also with the impulse of the ego that hopes to get this realization.
Yeah.
And then you must leave also that behind, the desire of realization, and then you will get your realization.
Maybe.
Yeah, a tricky.
If she wants to.
Yeah, if there's a grace, of course. Yeah.
If she thinks we're ready.
Yeah.
Okay, John Robert, here we are.
And I'd like a lively discussion there.
Oh, yeah, I recorded that all. Is it okay? Should we leave it there? I think, yes, you can. Huh? It's nothing personal.
It may even seem as if it were the greatest oneness, the second.
Do you reread this one?
It may even seem as if it were the greatest oneness, since it accepts all that we can be sensible of in the mind-created world as our own. Sometimes one sees it spoken of as the highest achievement. Certainly, it is a great realization and the path to a greater. It is that which the Gita speaks of as the accepting of all existences as if oneself, whether in grief or in joy. It is the way of sympathetic oneness and infinite compassion which helps the Buddhist to arrive at his nirvana. Still, there are gradations and degrees. In the first stage, the soul is still subject to the reactions of the duality, still subject, therefore, to the lower prakriti. It is depressed or hurt by the cosmic suffering, elated by the cosmic joy. We suffer the joys of others, suffer their griefs. And this oneness can be carried even into the body, as in the story of the Indian saint who, seeing a bullock tortured in the field by its cruel owner, cried out with the creature's pain, and the wheel of the lash was found reproduced on his own flesh. But there must be a oneness with Satchidananda in his freedom as well. But there must be a oneness with Satchidananda in his freedom as well as with the subjection of the lower being to the reactions of the prakriti. This is achieved when the soul is free and superior to the cosmic reactions, which are then only felt in the life, mind, and body, and as an inferior movement. The soul understands, accepts the experience, sympathizes, but is not overpowered or affected, so that at last even the mind and body learn also to accept without being overpowered or even affected, except on their surface. And the consummation of this movement is when the two spheres of existence are no longer divided, and the mind, life, and body obeying utterly the higher law, grow into the spirit's freedom, free from the lower or ignorant response to the cosmic touches. Their struggle and their subjection to the duality ceases. This does not mean insensibility to the subjection and struggles and sufferings of others, but it does mean a spiritual supremacy and freedom which enables one to understand perfectly, put the right values on things, and heal from above instead of struggling from below. It does not inhibit the divine compassion and helpfulness, but it does inhibit the human and animal sorrow and suffering.
The link between the spiritual and the lower planes of the being is that which is called in the old Vedantic phraseology the Vijnana, and which we may describe in our modern term of language as the truth plane, or the ideal mind or supermind. There, the one and the many meet, and our being is freely open to the revealing light of the divine truth and the inspiration of the divine will and knowledge. If we can break down the veil of the intellectual, emotional, sensational mind, which our ordinary existence has built between us and the divine, we can then take up through the truth mind all our mental, vital, and physical experience and offer it up to the spiritual. This was the secret or mystic sense of the old Vedic sacrifice, to be converted into the terms of the infinite truths of Satchitananda, and we can receive the powers and illuminations of the infinite existence in forms of a divine knowledge, will, and delight to be imposed on our mentality, vitality, physical existence, till the lower members are transformed into the perfect vessel of the higher nature. This was a double Vedic movement of the descent and birth of the gods in the human creature and the ascent of the human powers that struggle towards the divine knowledge, power, and delight and climb into the Godhead, the result of which was the possession of the One, the Infinite, the beatific existence, the union with God, the immortality. By possession of this ideal plane, we break down entirely the opposition of the lower and the higher existence, the false gulf created by the ignorance between the finite and infinite God and nature, the One and the Many. Open that the gates of the divine, fulfill the individual and the complete harmony of the cosmic consciousness, and realize in the cosmic being the epiphany and the transcendent Satchitananda. And these results, which obtained on the supramental plane itself or beyond, would be the highest perfection of the human being we can attain to partially in a very modified way, in a sort of mental figure by awakening into activity on the corresponding plane of the mental nature. We can get a luminous shadow of that perfect harmony and light, but this belongs to another part of our subject. It is a knowledge on which we must found our yoga of self-perfection. End of chapter 15, The Cosmic Consciousness.
Well, that was a whole bunch more that you read than I have. My sentence ends with and realize in the cosmic being the epiphany of the transcendent Satchitananda, period.
Oh, yeah. And
there was a whole bunch more that you read.
Yeah.
Andrea, I wonder if you have the yoga of self-perfection in your book, because I think Sri Aurobindo added that later to the synthesis.
And would that be at the end?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could look in the table of contents and
yeah,
see
that
if it shows up
easier.
There.
Yeah. Let me see. And maybe not. Huh. I have the last thing I have is towards the supramental time vision.
Is your table of contents divided into parts? Part one, part two.
Yes, I have part four, the yoga of self-perfection.
Okay, oh, so you do have that.
Oh, that whole section. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, but they added details later. Even I think this is the sixth impression of 2010.
So where are we actually? In what section? What part are we right now?
Part two.
We are only in part two?
Yeah. But chapter 15. 15 is a lot.
We're in the yoga of knowledge.
Okay.
And then we should have the bhakti yoga. That's part three. And then yoga of self-perfection.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we are almost at 418 pages on 910.
Still, wow. We have a page to go. Yahoo!
Yeah, but if we make every time one chapter, if it's not too long, then we can.
But it is, right?
No, but well, there are some chapters that are really longer, and they don't know if we can manage it to go through it all in one session. Yeah. Unless
we
want to.
We don't need to worry about it. We just keep reading.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens.
I'm just wondering when we will finish. In how many years?
Might be in the next lifetime.
Yeah, because I'm dying. I will continue, but you will have to re-explain me the first part half. Because if I'm born as a baby, I have no mind, no longer the old mind, I have a new mind.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying we could continue in the realm of the psychic being, in the psychic realm.
Yeah.
No, that's chapter in that canto in Savitri, where he talks about where the souls go after they die before they come back.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
That is such a wonderful section.
But do they meet also there and speak to and have books?
Yeah, they have books there. Didn't you know that?
Are they books? Wonderful, great.
So we were in the habit of reading every chapter twice, which I think the last two chapters we haven't done, which I'm quite pleased with. But this one, I would like to read again.
Okay.
Isn't that true? Haven't we always read a chapter twice?
I think not necessarily. I think it's a really good idea anyway.
Yeah,
because we didn't really pause to talk about this.
No.
And I think, like I have Native American in the margin of one of the sections here, and another thing I marked was the suffering of divine delight. The suffering.
I know.
Pleasure and pain change into a mastering and a suffering of divine delight. I love that. Sherbino often uses that kind of language in his poetic. Like in Savitri.
Mm-hmm. So where did you have the American Indian annotation?
But you don't have the same page. It's the paragraph, it's about in the middle. It starts with, all this is when the mental being. That's how the paragraph starts.
Well, this is when the mental being takes its station in its own spiritual planes. Yeah. It's page 415.
Oh, I don't have a paragraph that starts with that line, with those words.
Okay, well.
Oh, well.
Okay.
So, okay.
Oh, I can read it. All this is when the mental being takes its station in its own spiritual planes. In the mental planes of Sat, Chit, Ananda, and casts down their light and delight upon the lower existence. Should I go through the whole paragraph?
Well, where I had it marked actually starts with the next sentence, but I had it marked on the next page where he says, the yogin is able to feel his body one with all bodies, to be aware of and even to participate in their affections.
He can feel constantly the unity of all matter and be aware of his physical being as only a movement in its movement. That sounds like all my relations to me.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And I had written in the margin at the beginning of that paragraph, from below. So Sri Aurobindo talks about achieving cosmic consciousness from above. But in this paragraph, the one that Marco started, he says, but there's possible the attempt at a kind of cosmic consciousness by dwelling on the lower planes themselves after breaking their limitations laterally and then calling down into them the light. So there's a kind of a movement from above, from below.
Yeah.
You're starting down below, and then you try to bring the light in from above. And that seems characteristically American to me. Both from the, I don't know so much whether it's true of the native people or not, but when we have, since we have such a strong materialism in the West, we often start with, on the material basis, you know, and then we've been finding openings where there's mystery, you know, something doesn't make sense, and we have to rise up to or call down some more light.
Yeah, that kind of points to the popularity of yoga, of hatha yoga, which is all in the body, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you're lucky, you find a teacher who includes higher planes. But
it's we have all these bodily therapies and all this work on the body, which is, I think, one of the benefits of having a materialistic outlook on life, because that all gets a lot of attention then.
Yeah.
Right.
This is not a coincidence that the West emphasized so much the Hatha Yoga instead of the it makes sense. But they are opening, we are opening also now, I think, to the other kinds of yogas. At least judging from what I see on YouTube.
Well,
it's not really what?
YouTube rules.
YouTube rules, yeah. YouTube rules, that's true, yeah.
Well, it is marvelous how much is available. Pretty much everything, every level of consciousness is available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's an expression of the movement of consciousness, you can see. Mm-hmm. Also in the negative sense, of course. YouTube can be, you have kind of a lot of trash.
Hand in hand, just like Sri Aurobindo was describing right here.
Yeah, he admitted in this chapter that we just read that all evil and division and all that comes from the divine too. So he specifically said that.
Yeah.
So we're going to hold him to it.
Yeah. But what I like from this chapter is I came to yoga precisely through this particular vision, which is a very metaphysical, philosophical point of view, because I was dissatisfied with a Christian, you know, the Christian vision. This was a bit too simplified for me, that it's just a body and a soul. And that's all. There is no, this is too binary. Yeah. It's just here instead, there's a cosmic consciousness, the supramental, the vital, the body, the psychic, the jivatma. Yeah, in a certain sense, it is a multiplication of entities that might confuse people, but at least nurtures a bit the mind and tells you, because this idea that I'm just only a body and a soul, and then there is also this evolutionary concept. He doesn't emphasize it too much, but you know, no? He has this evolutionary concept. And then suddenly it made sense to me. I said, okay, it is a vision and a concept. I see it, I perceive it only from a philosophical standpoint, but nurtures a bit better my questions. Because this idea then that when I die, I'm a soul and then I go to hell if I didn't behave properly, or perhaps in something in between the purgatorium, or, well, if I behave well, to heaven. But this strong opposition also, I can feel it still nowadays in this idea of the reincarnation. And I could not accept it. It made not much sense to me. Whereas when I read for the first time these things, I said, okay, perhaps they have a point here. Sri Aurobindo has a point, and maybe I will reconsider my tendency to become an atheist materialist. But I think this serves. This is a real reason of these chapters, because after all,
so I actually think that this particular chapter is all about the evolution, because it's about reaching the universal consciousness, which is a supramental, in my understanding.
Here,
very specific.
A non-dual teacher would tell you, but also Advaita Vedanta says that, no? But in the Advaita Vedanta, they don't have this evolutionary concept of the transformation, then of the vital, the mind, the body, at last.
And of being identified with the active divine. Is the activity is put away, right, for the eternal peace and silence of the nirvana.
Exactly. And here's the sentence that is: they enjoy the peace of the transcendent, but not the cosmic bliss of the transcendent. This is a sentence that make clearly the distinction between the non-dual teaching and what he is trying to put forward. He says, I'm not abolishing it, but I'm complementing it, extending. And I said, not just enjoy the peace, but enjoy also the bliss. Makes a lot of sense to me. Wonderful chapter.
I was struck by the sure-handedness of his writing in these vast realms that he's talking about with such grace and confidence. This is the way it is. And
precision.
Precision.
Also,
it's unparalleled as far as I know.
So, John Robert, you were reading that paragraph. It begins in my book with, "It may even seem as if it were the greatest oneness." You see that one?
Let me find it.
Since it accepts all that we can be sensible of in the mind-created world as our own.
Page 4, I see that, 16. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, let me see. This is 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. About 22 lines under the beginning, it says, the soul understands, accepts, sympathizes, but is not overpowered and affected. And then the next sentence, that's where you read a part that I don't have. And the consummation of this movement is when the two spheres of existence are no longer divided and the mind, life, and body grow into the spirit's freedom. And then you said something, and the mind, life, and body obeying utterly the divine law? Is that what it says?
I could read that sentence.
Yeah.
And the consummation of this movement is when the two spheres of existence are no longer divided, and the mind, life, and body obeying utterly the higher law grow into the spirit's freedom. From the lower or ignorant response to the cosmic touches, their struggle and their subjection to the duality ceases.
Thank you.
What about reaching out for the new edition, Andrea? You don't have it every time.
I've had this for a long time.
Okay. But you can find also the new edition in PDF format online.
Yeah, but I want to read from a paper, and I don't want to print it all out.
No, of
course. Yeah, I have it. I have it actually on my computer. I have the synthesis, but that's just if I want to look up something or share with somebody else.
Well, I guess we are about finished then, huh?
Yeah, I love how he comes back to the Vedas too. That's just very speaks to me. Okay, shall we? A
couple of minutes.
Okay, see you next time.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Good to see you.
Bye-bye.
Be well.